Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. I'm Erica Wides, your host, and you are listening to the Heritage Radio Network. So I'm going to start off tonight with a little pop quiz for you, you know, a little mid-semester quiz. I'm going to say a couple things, and you tell me which one doesn't belong. Question number one. Allen Ginsberg, Patti Smith, the capital of counterculture, Iggy Pop, Beatniks, Veselka, CBGB, Vampire Lesbians of Sodom, The East Village, 7-Eleven. Did you answer correctly? Just in case that one wasn't clear enough, let's try another. Starbucks, Subway, Dunkin' Donuts, KFC, Wendy's, McDonald's, Burger King, 7-Eleven, The East Village. Well, since you're a Let's Get Real listener, and you're probably very bright and not an idiot and somewhat clued in, or because you listen to me, very clued in, and generally speaking, the right kind of people, I'm going to venture a guess that you answered both pop quizzes correctly. But you may not be as right as you think. If you said that 7-Eleven doesn't belong in the East Village, then you're correct. Good job. As a reward for that, I'll like your Facebook post about the cake that you baked for your two-year-old adopted African nephew's birthday. And I'll pretend that I looked at your Instagram update on the $300 all organ meat tasting menu that you ate at the latest David Chang outpost. But here's where it gets complicated. It doesn't matter whether 7-Elevens belong in the East Village or not, because they're already there. There are, at present, four 7-Elevens in the East Village of Manhattan. And you can now get a Slurpee on St. Mark's Place as easily as you could score a dime bag in the 80s. Giuliani and Bloomberg cleaned up New York and made us all safe for diabetes. As we speak, 7-Eleven is planning its incursion even deeper into the heart of the East Village, into Alphabet City, specifically planning to open one on the iconic corner of 11th Street and Avenue A, right near where Kerouac and Ginsberg lived and worked. The point is that once 7-Eleven has succeeded in invading the East Village, they will belong, because it won't be the East Village anymore. They'll turn the East Village into a version of itself. Like Agent Smith in the Matrix sequel, sticking his hand into people and turning them into copies of himself. If 7-Eleven succeeds, 11th Street and Avenue A will be just one more corner for tourists, bros, and NYU students to buy blue-flavored energy drinks and marshmallow-flavored power bars. That is what we're talking about tonight on Let's Get Real. But why are we going to talk about 7-Elevens in the East Village? What does that have to do with Let's Get Real? Well, Let's Get Real is a show about food, specifically the difference between food and foodiness. What I've said before is that foodiness is truthiness ingested. When you look at it that way, food and foodiness are a nexus point for all of the real and the fake in our lives, between a vegetable and a veggie puff, fruit and a fruit bar, protein and protein powder, water and cherry-flavored sports water without electrolytes, fiber and fat-free, low-calorie, red berry cereal enhanced with fiber. Socializing with people and socializing alone in your bedroom on Facebook. Singing and lip-syncing. Sex and sexting. Reality and reality shows. We cover it all in LGR because it's all connected. And I don't mean connected like social media. I mean actually connected. No likes required. For my under 30 listeners, because I care about you too, if you don't know what a connection was before social media, just Google it. The point is that if there is an ultimate nexus point between foodiness and truthiness, and thus between the real and the fake in all of our lives, it's 7-Eleven. If there's an icon of a real urban neighborhood left in the country, it would be the East Village. And if there's an icon of everything that is synthetic and manufactured in society today, it's 7-Eleven. If you've been listening to Let's Get Real long enough, you know I blame everything on foodiness. From Sarah Palin and the Tea Party to Kim Kardashian and Real Housewives, that's because foodiness infantilizes us and makes us stupid, disconnects us from reality, and just makes the whole matrix possible. As I've been saying all along, while eating foodiness puts us into the realm of the fake, or as I like to say, down the foodiness rabbit hole, these days eating food is a revolutionary act that brings us back into the realm of the real. Of course, in an era where walking into Taco Bell using your legs instead of driving your mobility scooter through the drive-thru is a revolutionary act, the threshold is kind of low. But you get the point. If 7-Eleven succeeds in turning the East Village from the capital of counterculture to the self-serve counter where you fill your big gulp, then we're all fucked. Here to get real with us tonight about the candification, infantilization, gentrification, corporatization, techification, suburbanization, middle Americanization, and now Pringleization of the East Village are the two leaders of the No 7-Eleven NYC movement, Dr. Rob Hollander and Bob Holman. Now, Dr. Rob Hollander heads up the 11th Street ABC Block Association. He's a native Eastside New Yorker, author, researcher, and licensed tour guide. Dr. Hollander has lived in Alphabet City since the fabulously neo-apocalyptic 1970s. He's an educator at the Lower East Side History Project, and he organized the recent Block Association meeting to kick off the opposition to the 7-Eleven opening on East 11th Street and Avenue A. Bob Holman is an internationally renowned poet and the owner of the Bowery Poetry Cafe, which is home for poetry on the Lower East Side and a last remaining pillar of everything left that is not corporate in the neighborhood. He is the co-director of New Yorican Poets Cafe, where he introduced slam poetry in 1988. He's been called ringmaster of the spoken word and the poetry czar. It turns out that Bob also raises bees and likes rabbit holes too, like me, which we'll get to. But more cogent right now is that Bob coined the term Pringleize, making the claim at the protest meeting and in the media that 7-Eleven is Pringleizing the East Village. So welcome to Bob and Rob. Thanks for joining us here on Wow. Let's Get Real. Wow. You like that intro?
I loved it. I love Dr. Rob, too.
Dr. Rob, huh? Well, PhD, right?
Yep,
Dr. Right. Rob.
That's okay. What the friends call me.
Well, then that's what we're going to call you here. We're all amongst friends. Okay, so let's start there. When I first heard this term Pringleize, I thought maybe it was Pringles' new ad campaign to teach us how to add Pringles to any meal. Are you suggesting that it might connote something else?
It's the fact that I like my potato chips to come in different shapes, you know?
Right.
And the more you think about it, which isn't really a whole lot you have to acknowledge that to take a potato, and this is very appropriate for 7-Eleven, because they have mashed potato machines in there now.
Do they really?
And I thought, wow, that must be pretty yucky, because you get the potatoes, you got to peel them and put this. But I shouldn't have worried, because all they do is they have little packages of potato flakes that they mix with the boiling water. And then you press the button for the kind of gravy you want.
Ew.
I'm not kidding you.
Really?
This is, this is how they're going to take over.
That is seriously foodiness.
That to Pringleize is to conform, to force conformity and stick humans in a tube for easier shipping.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
What I boiled down
right.
to for me.
Or when I actually first saw the press about you guys and I saw that term, my first thought actually was all those brand new high rises along 6th Avenue in the 20s where it used to be the Flower District and how those buildings to me are like giant cans stacked full of identical apartments and then stacked full of identical people. Like, to me, that's Pringleizing of
you
New York.
Know, you could look at the Avalon buildings on Bowery and Houston,
oh, yeah.
which I do right. since I live across the street from them. And it's not that they're ugly so much as they are just bland and boring and anti-Bowery.
Yeah.
And all of those buildings that are Pringleized, as you say, whether they look like the actual tubes or whether they're just stamped out of some kind of postmodern Soviet realism, you know, it's they don't belong. You know? And that's what you were saying. I love that intro about 7-Eleven is an anathema. It's a unification of appetites in a place that's a total the paradise for hedonism.
Sure. And for the full spectrum of appetites, sort of no matter what you wanted, that was where you could find it in that neighborhood. Yeah. So
not for long.
Not for long. No, I know. I mean, I lived in East Village in the early mid 80s and left, and I rarely get back over there. And when I do, I don't recognize the blocks anymore. The landmarks are gone. I don't know where I am. I have no sort of connection to the place, no sense of place anymore. So why target Pringles? Why not Cheetos or Doritos or Funyuns for that matter?
It was simply that, Alex, that you know, to take potato paste and push it into a mold so that they can all fit conveniently into the container. Mm-hmm. Cheetos, you know, regardless of what you think and how your fingers look after you've been eating them, they do come out of individual taste.
At least they don't come in a tube, you know?
They don't come in a tube. They have personality, Cheetos. You could say the same. Why 7-Eleven and why not McDonald's or Subway's or Starbucks, you know, which managed to sneak in under our radar? There was just something about the genericism of their genre that just totally rankled, was wrong, and made the whole thing. And it's going to tip the apple cart back on top of those other chains also, because that's what we're really looking for, ain't it, Dr. Rob?
Well, we're going all the way with this.
You're taking it all the way to the top.
Yeah, all the way. Yeah. You know, if you're a chain, we're going to get unshackled.
Mm. You know, what I think is interesting is, you know, living in that neighborhood and in New York in general, you know, since the early 80s, I sort of saw that the first wave of the Korean delis coming in. I remember how everything was turning into like the Korean produce and delis. And, you know, that sort of became like the generic, the standard. Now the Korean delis are being pushed out. There's one in Chelsea where I work, where I used to go to get lunch because they actually had this great salad bar that I loved. And that shut down. And now that's a 7-Eleven. And when I thought, if a Korean greengrocer deli can't afford the rent in New York anymore, then that's it. I mean, that's seriously the end.
Well, that's why you have four 7-Elevens in one neighborhood and another 100 planned for Manhattan.
Way. Yeah, yeah.
It's not to serve anyone in any community. It's to drive out the competition. It's actually a corporate strategy to take over the streets.
Sure, sure.
And it's we see this on Duane Reade that opened right next to a CVS on 1st Avenue between 14th Street and 15th Street. Now, the entire street there is just storefront. There's a CVS, there's a Duane Reade, and there's a, what is it, a Chase Bank?
I was going to say probably a Chase Bank.
One or the other, right?
Yeah.
Now, Duane Reade just opened right next to CVS. Mm-hmm. They offer the same sorts of things.
Right.
So this is not about offering anything to a community, offering anything to any consumer.
Right.
It's just a corporate warfare,
right,
and we are the spectators. It's happening in our streets.
Right. It's like a corporate bulldozing of each other, and whoever has the biggest bulldozer just gets to clear the space and take over.
Yeah, yeah, it's the strategies of capitalism. Like when you say that the Koreans moved in, yeah, that's the waves of immigration is what has created the Lower East Side.
Sure.
And the Koreans were, you know, the Koreans took over from the Italians,
right,
you
the
know,
old Italian and the Italians.
Then in
the
other
Jews.
Neighbors, it was the Puerto Rican, New Yorkans who came in and took over, you know.
Right.
But the reason why they came in was because they had families together. Mm-hmm. They raised money together. They came in. They reshaped the neighborhood. They added to it. They built onto a culture. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something that came down as a corporate dictum on how to make the most buckaroonies.
Right. Corporate management from afar. Because 7-Eleven is not a local corporation.
No, of
course not.
They're
out in Texas.
Right, some kind of algorithm where they sort of put in population and income stats and say, okay, where can we Where can we Target next? Where can we
Target is a good Target word.
Yeah.
We're the Target.
Well, be careful because you'll get a Target opening down there soon enough, like you got up in East Harlem. So this all sounds to me like you think maybe the East Village is too good for 7-Eleven. This sounds like what a lot of middle Americans and people new to New York today and the Tea Party set would call elitism. So by rejecting this corporate culture, are you being elitist? Now, longtime New Yorker Fran Lebowitz said that elite is just the right's code word for smart or intelligent. But today it's also conflated with being wealthy. So are we just being elitist? Are we just being snooty New Yorkers trying to still play bohemia, still trying to hold on to the dream of the 70s?
You know, I don't see that at all. What I see is a destruction of our free market.
Mm-hmm.
This is really not about elitism of any kind, even if it's reverse elitism. We had a free market in Manhattan, and now we have these corporations mm-hmm. that are much too big for anyone to withstand.
Right, they're like category killers.
It's something that
they just wipe everyone out.
Yeah, you know, I was at an Occupy meeting, with the Alt Bank Occupy meeting, and Kathy O'Neill described the illusion of choice. You see all these stores, but they're actually the same store.
Right.
7-Eleven offers only corporate foods.
Right. You get 60 flavors of Pringles offered to you.
That's
but
right.
They're all
you've
still
got
Pringles.
Your mashed potatoes.
Your
you've got,
potato
you've got your potatoes. Your hot dogs that are made out of wood that
your
are
microwave
up
burritos.
There going around. Your
right.
microwave burritos, and it's also about the quality of that food. It's how it's again. It's coming to you as being price point defined from on high. What is going to sell, mm-hmm. and what we can make the most money off of. Not at all concerned with what the neighborhood is.
Right. The target is not people, it's statistics. You don't exist as a person for 7-Eleven. Mm-hmm. You exist very much as a number.
Yeah, well, the food, I mean, even saying that they sell food, they don't sell food. The products that they sell are not food. They're, they're beyond foodiness in a way, some of them. They're just sort of, little corporate machine-produced, turds being popped
calorie
out
turds,
of a machine
calorie turds.
And then being fed back to people. Somebody once said that advertising is just feeding people back their own shit. And that's sort of, to me, what 7-Eleven is like, how can we sort of process and package this shit to appeal to this demographic in this market? What's interesting is I spent a lot of time traveling in Asia, and Thailand and Japan in particular are filled with 7-Elevens. But the 7-Elevens there sell a lot of package and a lot of processed stuff, but they actually do sell food. Because the people there aren't quite so far down the foodiness rabbit hole as we are, and so they still want their food to look recognizable and look like real food. So you can go into a 7-Eleven in Tokyo and get onigiri, which are like rice balls wrapped in seaweed with like cod roe inside of them, something you wouldn't even find here in a more high-end deli. So it's interesting how it's so conceptualized and sort of micro marketed to that place, except that here in America, that place is just here in America. It doesn't matter
the
where
target,
we are.
The target here is a youth market.
Yeah, it's NYU students.
NYU students, yeah. and young singles.
Right.
People who have a dorm room, they want to run out, get something quick, and bring it home.
Yeah.
The problem is that if they're going to have this bulldozing effect of choking out their competition, what they're going to end up providing to the entire neighborhood is this youth market of, Pringles and
just processed
sugar
shit, right?
Yeah.
Slurpees and sodas and Pringles and frozen burritos and.
I mean, if you take a look at Banksy's, this came out in a recent article that it was studied. They interviewed a whole bunch of people and found that people most like the banking experience with a small bank.
Mm-hmm.
They most like a credit union, and they least like Citibank, Chase Bank, mm-hmm. the big corporations. It's too cold. It's too impersonal. They don't get enough attention. Well, if you look in our neighborhood, we see a Chase Bank and every other block, I think. We have a credit union, but you have to go all the way to Avenue B and 3rd Street to find the credit union. Mm-hmm. Now, people want to go to the credit union.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to bank with the credit union. But Chase is everywhere.
Yeah,
it's
Chase,
so convenient.
Chases them out. That's their name, Chase.
What we're seeing with the 7-Eleven is not the final stage. Mm-hmm. It's the process.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the trajectory. What is the future going to be if we've already got these Starbucks, we've already got the Dunkin' Donuts, now we're going to have the 7-Eleven. Well, what is the next stage? Mm-hmm. What is going to happen to Manhattan when 7-Elevens have spread? 100, I think it's 147 in the whole of the city that they're planning.
They
want to
have,
like
the statistics we got from the original Times article was to have 100 stores in Manhattan by 2015, which is only, that's less
like
than
tomorrow.
2 years away. I mean, yeah. You say 2015, it sounds really far
it's
in the future,
aggressive.
Because I still think it's like 1997. I haven't caught up, but that's a less than 2 years away. 100 stores in Manhattan alone. That's pretty scary. And I can't, I mean,
50 a year.
It's the tipping point of, but I can't even imagine what's worse. Like, what happens next, you know, after that?
Well, that's why you want to stop it now. You know, in San Francisco, there are already laws to keep chains out. You know, why is it that our community boards vote on whether or not a bar should move in, but not whether or not there should be a chain store that moves in that takes over the business from the bodegas?
True.
You know, so that's, we want to institute some way that there can be local control, a voice of the neighborhood on what kind of stores are going to be there, that we are not dictated to from above, which is the law of capitalism.
Sure.
That somebody up there is going to make the decision for you.
Somebody's lobbying in Washington and saying screw all the people.
To go as far as that, we have a city administration that is giving the advantage to corporate stores.
Why,
like
Slurpees can be any size, I understand,
yeah,
Dr.
Slurpees
Rob.
Are exempt.
I thought there was a ban on supersize.
But not on Slurpees for some reason. I'm not sure why.
No, but it doesn't...
Nobody
can figure
for 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven is exempt? Don't tell me that. Bob.
So, Slurpee, Burpee, 7-Eleven is jerky. And I'm not talking beef jerky or turkey jerky.
Beef jerky.
Just talking jerky.
No, we don't eat turkey jerky. That's food.
7-Eleven, don't add up. I want local in my cup.
Well, but we've managed to keep Walmart out. I mean, Walmart's been trying for years to get into New York, and that's been fought successfully. So
the same kind of labor problems that Walmart has, 7-Eleven is renowned for having, too.
Although 7-Elevens are franchises and Walmart isn't, so it's a whole different set.
Yeah, but if you look at your 7-Eleven, it's all self-service. That's the whole model, is that you don't have to interact with a human being at all.
Right. Right. Just the guy behind the counter.
Behind the counter, right. And it's a large store. So it's the opposite of labor intensive.
Yeah.
Right? It's minimal labor.
Right.
Per square foot, if you want to
basically
think of it that
operates
way.
Itself.
So it's taking away labor, taking away jobs
a lot of
from
jobs.
Our neighbor.
Yeah.
Neighborhood.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, more with Rob and Bob and talking about the 7-Eleven invasion of Manhattan. We'll be back in just a minute. I really need. Yeah. And if you leave me, ooh, baby, if you leave me this way, girl, I may not live to see a brand new day. Yeah, I'm begging you.
This one's called Don't Let the Green Grass Fool You by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And remember that if you're a fan of Let's Get Real, you can follow us on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. You can also always listen to any Heritage Radio Network show ever produced on iTunes or on Heritage Radio letsgetrealshow.network.org. And you should check out my website, letsgetrealshow.com, where you can also watch my recent appearance on the Dr. Oz show, where I tried to get Dr. Oz to say foodiness, and he did say it, but it was edited out. But I had my moment of success there. So we are talking tonight with Rob and Bob about the influx of 7-Elevens into New York, particularly in the East Village. So we've been talking about how 7-Eleven wants to open 100 stores in Manhattan in the next 2 years. And when 7-Eleven was asked about, you know, why they want to do this, the statement that they made, particularly about the store in the East Village that we're focusing on, was this. 7-Eleven said, "There is a high concentration of young adults and young families on a budget. They all have a harried, on-the-go lifestyle, and we can help make their lives a bit easier and more convenient." Now, if I were a young family, which I am not, I don't have children, I would not do my grocery shopping at 7-Eleven. I wouldn't find 7-Eleven to make my life more convenient or easier. And anytime someone evokes the word families, you know you're in trouble, because you're not allowed to come out against families. And so if you say, oh, well, that's bad that it makes families' lives easier, then of course you're anti-family and then you're anti-American. So do you guys want to speak a little bit? I mean, you've lived in the East Village a very long time, and you know about the demographic. There have always been families in the East Village. My great-grandparents lived on the Lower East Side. It's been a family neighborhood forever.
What did they have for dinner?
What's that?
What did your great-grandparents have for dinner?
Probably herring. A lot of herring. You know, they were Jews right out of Russia. Herring, potatoes, a little chicken fat when they could get it. Yeah. They actually, I don't know if they lived, I know they lived on the Lower East Side briefly, and then they all moved out to East New York, Brooklyn, like, you know, deepest, darkest Brooklyn.
Yeah, just remember that, talk about families. Families own bodegas.
Yeah,
families
exactly. Own delis. Right. And it's been a family neighborhood for a lot longer than it was ever like a young hipster student neighborhood, too.
And so far as I know, last I checked, families are allowed to shop at bodegas and delis.
Yeah, sure. And can actually buy some food there as opposed to
the greengrocer, too.
Yeah, greengrocer. Right.
Real
farmers
food.
Market, real and, food. Yeah.
The you know it's all there the schools on the Lower East Side are all full and brimming and opening new schools all the time. But yeah, it is in many ways a family neighborhood. Of course, on the other hand, the gentrification down there is pricing in mm-hmm. in some areas, again, like the Avalon buildings across on the Bowery. There are you know, that's where you have 3,000 new singles. You know, strivers who want to the yuppification syndrome.
I haven't
that's
heard
going
that word in a long
there.
Time.
You know, they're opening up on 11th Street and Avenue A, not to serve the local community.
No,
they're actually opening there because there are a lot of bars right around there.
Yeah, it's so always been.
Yeah, they're looking
a party
for
yeah.
for people coming out at 4 o'clock in the
right.
morning for a place that's open at the. That they are familiar with, because
right.
these are people who are not local.
Yeah.
It's a bar scene right
yeah.
here.
Yeah. It's for people who are new to New York or who are students coming from out of town or just in town to party. And also, of course, 7-Eleven sells cigarettes. And people who are out late at night going to bars generally want to smoke, and that's a good place to buy cigarettes. I think it's getting harder to find places to buy cigarettes in New York. If you don't have a corner deli or a bodega, you know, that's probably a huge part of their business. 7-Eleven says that the neighborhood is underserved.
There's a bodega, right?
I know.
Right
well,
down the block. There are actually three bodegas right
yeah,
down
we,
the block.
Yeah, we took a lovely bodega walk last Saturday
right.
and went to four bodegas and within the two-block radius of the 11th Street 7-Eleven to be. And there were several more that we didn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we concluded by a great stop at the Tompkins Square Bagelry, mm-hmm. where we all sat around and had bagels. That's not an official bodega. That's a bagel place. But it's still in competition with what 7-Eleven would be serving, you know?
Right. I mean, not to mention there are two farmers markets in the East Village. There's the one at St. Mark's Church, and there's the one in Tompkins Square
right.
on two different days. I mean, it's underserved if you feel a severe lack of a place to get a Slurpee or, you know, mashed potatoes from a machine, then I suppose it's underserved. But this is a neighborhood that people have been living in for hundreds of years, raising families and surviving just fine. So let's talk about Bloomberg.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Let's talk about Bloomberg's truthiness, that 7-Elevens are inevitable and they're good for the economy and they're just a natural part of gentrification, which is a word we have been talking about. Now, first of all, this term gentrification in the East Village has been thrown around for like 30 years now. I mean, it's been a long time coming. It's been happening very steadily. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we're sort of hitting a peak of it now. But, you know, we talk about gentrification. I don't recall learning about any time period in history when the landed gentry actually drank Slurpees or asked their household staff to reheat their microwavable burrito.
Oh, the decline of American
culture. But you get the point. So a 7-Eleven on 11th Street and Avenue A, I suppose, is inevitable in Bloomberg's New York. Like you said, it's just the next wave. Now, a lot of commenters, and I say that in quotes, in the social media realm have also suggested that 7-Elevens are better than bodegas because they're safer and better lit and cleaner. And as one person put it, you're not as likely to get shot at a 7-Eleven like you are at a bodega because, of course, we know bodegas are so dangerous if you're living in 1981. So does 7-Eleven make the East Village any safer?
You know, I think in the Midwest, 7-Elevens are known for being a target of
for robbers, armed robbery. I know, that's what, when I saw that, that's what I said. Yeah, you hear about shootings in, you know, Des Moines. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people, I think 7-Eleven actually promotes this sort of bright lighting and its cleanliness, and people complain that the bodegas are not clean.
Right.
But, you know, if you go look at a bodega and you look around, you don't see an ambulance stationed right outside the bodega waiting for people to come out and fall over and food poisoning. People eat at bodegas every single day. That's what they're there for.
Right.
This is not an issue of cleanliness. It's that 7-Eleven has this image of cleanliness. It's promoting this sort of pristininess, this cleaniness.
Well, it's sterility. It's feeling of sterility.
It's like cleansing. You know, it's
of every human touch.
Right.
Right. There's nothing no alive.
As far as that
right.
good
nothing
lighting goes.
Exactly. 7-Eleven.
I'd call it garish, and I've never seen people look quite so ugly and cartoonish as they do
right.
in a 7-Eleven.
It's just not sexy.
The cashier has to wear in a uniform.
Yeah, hideous.
You know,
the
bodega, a human being is standing in front of
and
you.
And are you talking about a green
like a
and orange
being.
Uniform in the middle of the night under the garish lights?
It goes with a mashed potato
It's
machine.
Twilight Zone, and it's not New York. You know, it is not... what is that word?
It's like the War of the Worlds to me. It's an invasion of New York from Mars.
It is. From, like, the Mars Mall.
It is not inevitable. And, in fact, this is the time that we have to start saying that what New York is its variety and veracity. Mm-hmm. You know, what it isn't is corporate cleansing of the neighborhood.
And it's not inevitable because this is really planned.
Mm-hmm.
This is our administration.
Yeah.
It's really Bloomberg.
Selling it out.
That's right.
Yep. Completely selling it out.
Because corporates they can pay higher rents,
of course,
than anything else.
Right.
What we're really talking about is tax revenue,
mm-hmm.
and the city has done this in every possible way to raise revenue, to raise real estate values, everywhere in the city.
Mm-hmm.
There is no planning about communities. There is no consideration of what the communities might want. It's all this mayor has treated New York as if it were a business,
mm-hmm.
not as if it were a conglomerate of a bunch of communities
right.
with a lot of people.
Tiny, fragile, very complicated, complex neighborhoods.
So there is nothing inevitable in this. This is policy.
Yeah.
This is plan.
Intentional. Yeah. Oh, I live two blocks from the Barclays Arena, so I can tell you what it's like to live in a neighborhood where you're
planned.
Bulldozed by corporate planning. Yeah, two blocks away. So one of the local franchise owners of two 7-Elevens has offered you both a peace Slurpee, which I guess is Olive Branch flavored. I don't know. I didn't know they made that flavor. I'd actually like to try that, the Peace Slurpee. In an interview, he said in regards to resistance to 7-Elevens in East Village that everyone has the right to their own opinion, though I'm not exactly sure what their opinion is.
Let's talk about somebody who really doesn't get it.
Somebody who really doesn't get it, who lives, you know, he lives in New Jersey and he owns two 7-Eleven franchises and he doesn't really see any issue with opening up in the neighborhood. And
well, but I thought 7-Eleven was supposed to promote our local commerce.
Local commerce, right. Supporting local business.
So, you know, when you see those signs over a storefront, you know, it's a death knell. It's an aesthetic of bland sameness that is not why people come to New York to be tourists. It's not why I came to New York to be a citizen. Mm-hmm. You know, you come here because it's got that spirit. You know, there's a spirit of individualism here,
yeah,
as well as a spirit of community.
That's why
there's
I left Long Island at 17.
Bunch of anarchists over there in that neighborhood, and they're not going to stand for being dictated to on what their food is going to be. You know, and nor should we. You know, it's not, it is, and this is where we have to take what is so-called inevitable and let the communities start to take the power of what is their communities are going to look like,
mm-hmm, exactly,
you know. And it's not, we are not for sale to the highest bidder. You know, we need a community that works and a variety and feel where the people that are making the food are buying it in the, or talk about buy local.
Yeah.
Get vocal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, talk about community response. We had a... This whole started when a neighbor said to me, you know, there's a 7-Eleven coming on 11th Street and mm-hmm. Avenue A. It's horrible. What can we do? What mm-hmm. can our block association do? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, who knows what we can do. But we can have a meeting and see what we can do. So we set a meeting for November 14th, right? This was October. And intervening was Hurricane Sandy.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So we still had this scheduled meeting 2 weeks after the hurricane. And we put hurricane relief on our agenda because we didn't want to look like fools.
Mm.
So we had this big meeting, largest meeting we've ever had for the Block Association. And so I went around to have everybody introduce themselves and say, what is it you want to talk about today? And no one wanted to talk about hurricane relief. Everyone wanted to talk about the 7-Eleven. Mm. So the community has really spoken here. They've come out from everywhere. Mm. They respond to this. This really means a lot to them. And of these people who are at the meeting, something like 80% of them are actively engaged in our, what is it, like 8-10 teams?
Yeah. Yeah,
there was a bodega walk. There's going to be a bodega parade. We have a press team. We have
a street team. It's really great how the generations are all represented. So the mothers are there talking about going into the school and trying to get the schools to educate the kids on what the food is going to be there. It's a remarkable.
So it's really galvanizing the neighborhood. It's pulling people together, sort of like the way after the demolition of Penn Station, people kind of pulled together and said, "Wait a minute, what's going on in the city? Why are we tearing down our beautiful landmarks that we've had for 100 years? What's, you know, sort of wake up and see, you know, so we don't wind up with another Madison Square Garden."
Exactly.
It's sort of like the second
wave
of that.
And it really did help to form, you know, the Landmarks Commission has really made a difference on keeping, you know, some of the history that we want to keep there. And this is, you know, this is what we're working with the community to, and why zoning should be responsive, not just to what alcohol is coming in, but the whole nature mm-hmm. of the place. Mm-hmm. And there's a real danger that it's going to, I don't like it that every place looks alike out there.
Sure.
You know, it's okay alone you're on the interstate. That's, you know, whatever can work there. But when you go into the towns, you want to feel like you're in
a place.
Yeah.
Right, a place where there's a there.
Yeah.
You know, where you have a sense of connectedness and a sense of people building businesses and becoming part of a community. I mean, if you look at the chain invasion of Manhattan, which has been going on for a while now, you can see that a lot of it has been foodiness based. It's, you know, a lot of it is about food. A lot of it is bringing fast food and chains and all sorts of convenience food into New York. Subway is everywhere. Dunkin' Donuts came in a few years ago. People are shopping for their groceries at CVS and Rite Aid. Well, at the same time, we have this like incredible green market system and all these really good food stores and this amazing, you know, restaurant scene in New York. It's like this crazy kind of juxtaposition of like the lowest common denominator chain right up against, you know, like I said before, like the newest David Chang restaurant in the East Village. But
so there wants to be something in the middle.
There's something in the middle.
You know, there wants to be something in the middle. And I think the way you do that is by not allowing the chains to raise the rent on the places that allow the fundamental foundations of our neighborhoods to
It's like when you grade exams and you throw out, you know, the bottom, the lowest grades, like grading on a curve. We need to throw out the lowest common denominator on that. But, you know, because this is a show about food and we talk about foodiness, I talk about this a lot. Foodiness is on the front lines of the corporatization and this kind of sterile mass uniformity that's happening in Manhattan. And my argument is that foodiness is making us dumb. Foodiness is dumbing us down. If the presumption that people even say, well, 7-Eleven sells food, it's not food. There's no actual food in there. And so what they're selling is making us stupid. Your brain can't function properly if it's all it's being fed is artificial flavors and corn syrup and slushy mix and mashed potatoes from a machine and, you know, all of that stuff. So on a core level, I think this is all about lobotomizing New York and particularly the East Village, sort of taking away the sharp level of intellect that people have always had here. New Yorkers have always prided themselves on being smarter, better, more creative, more elite. And it's like this corporate plan to like lobotomize, particularly the East Village, which has always been this center of dissent and anarchy and troublemakers.
Yes, it's not just the food that's being offered. It's the aesthetic that's being offered. Mm-hmm. And it's the variety, the lack of variety
that's being offered. Right.
So you're being lobotomized if you walk down your street and every store you see is identical to some other store someplace else.
Right.
You no longer can look around and think, where am I? What is distinctive of this place? What kinds of people live here? What kind of special culture is there here? And that's being wiped out from Manhattan.
My friend, you have been Pringleized.
You've been Pringleized, right. So they dumb down the East Village, then they dumb down New York, and then you dumb down the rest of the country because, you know,
that's
as
right.
New
the
York
basic,
goes.
You know, the basic mood of the horrific triumph of capitalism is to take our citizens and look at them as consumers.
Right.
That we, you know, the consumer, that's it's the end product of capitalism, you know. And you, the game is, the battle is, the war is to get you to buy this specific well-advertised product. And you do that because of psychological advertising techniques, and it has nothing to do with the true value of that, either as something that is nutritious or as something, and I'm proud of it to talk about aesthetics, you know? I don't think it's elitist to talk about aesthetics. I think it's dumbing down, as you say, when you say that, that's of nobody's concern. All we want to do is know that our fried chicken tastes good. That's not it.
And that it tastes the same in every outlet where we buy it. And it's hot and it's salty and it's exactly the same fried chicken from the same industrially raised factory made chicken plant somewhere out in God knows where. Yeah.
But it's also contrary to the whole notion of the free market. You know, you talk about capitalism. This is not really just capitalism. This is corporate giant capitalism, corporate giant control afar.
It's corpocracy. If you read, did you read Cloud Atlas?
I didn't. Now I will.
Yeah. So the term they use is corpocracy. Yeah. Corpocracy. Where they have a there's a chapter in the book set in the future in unified Korea. So North and South Korea have become unified, and they've taken the sort of dictatorship of the North and the lack of free will and the lack of choice and merged it with the rampant capitalist society of the South, and everything is controlled now by these corporations. So instead of like Kim Jong-il telling you exactly what to do and say and think, the corporations are telling you what to do and say, and they call it corpocracy.
It's corporate socialism.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Ganyam style.
It's Ganyam style. Yeah, yeah. So on a related note, you know, the East Village, of course, has always been famous as a center for arts and ideas, and you could walk around for hours and go to bookstores and see art shows and just have all sorts of sort of interesting experiences that changed your life. It's why, you know, when I left home at 17 and never looked back, I moved to 11th between 1st and 2nd. That was my first apartment, and that's where I lived. And, of course, ironically, or maybe not so ironically, the show Rent was set on 11th and A. I don't know if you know that. I had to sit through a high school musical production of Rent this weekend in D.C. And, you know, we were planning this show, and in the intro to Rent, they say, you know, this takes place on 11th Street and Avenue A in an abandoned industrial building.
Alex, that is genius. I think we're going to now do a version of Rent.
Yeah.
With you know, with 7-Eleven as
instead of Life Cafe,
instead of Life Cafe, right?
Whoa,
right? Recently departed Life Cafe, yeah, right. So it's set in there. But anyway, you can't walk around now and have that sort of experience. I mean, I think in the East Village you still can find that, but in a lot of New York now, you can't walk around and have that experience of stumbling upon an interesting bookstore or a gallery or an independent business or just something really interesting and quirky with texture and fabric, because it is all the Chase Banks and the 7-Elevens. And it's like what we're saying about the dumbing down. It's like about killing ideas, killing individual ideas, so that we're all programmed to think in the same way and eat the same way and eat the foodiness and to shop in those stores and you know, just
accept
sort of taking away the
obey.
Character. Accept and obey, exactly. Become a Pringle. Mm. I mean, that's what it is. It's sort of flattening us all out into these uniform potato paste crisps stacked in a can. Talk about the carbon footprint, too, of Pringles. I mean, that can, what do you do with that? You can't recycle it. What's it made out of?
Right. That's a good question.
Yeah. Huge carbon footprint.
I don't think they're made out of potato rinds, but they're sort of meant to appear like if a potato peel were going to be surrounding a Pringle, what would it look like? It would look like one of those red tubes.
Yeah. And they sell them all over the world. I mean, everywhere I've traveled except Cuba. They didn't have them in Cuba, but everywhere else I've been in the world, you can
and
buy Pringles.
They're the same shape wherever
you go. They're the same shape,
go.
But they have different flavors. They sell different flavors depending
on where
you are.
That's the whole purpose. You can disseminate
right.
them anywhere and
right.
everywhere.
Right, and you can customize, you know, so you have this illusion of choice.
And they never go bad.
They never go bad.
It's
and
pretty amazing.
In
they,
some of the
but
varieties.
They never go good either.
Right.
And they and as, you know, they are really perfect for dips. I mean, I gotta kill them.
They are.
You can stomach them.
You know.
Right.
You know, they're not all potato.
They're not all potato. And some of the varieties.
The worst tasting thing I've ever done.
Right.
Well, no, you like sawdust. You like compressed sawdust.
It
gives you that bitter nothingness that is really the, you know, what the essence. Like Sam Beckett would really understand the taste of a Pringle.
Right.
You know?
It's like the waiting for a Godot, just waiting to get the flavor of that Pringle. You'll never get
you
it.
You can suck on it and suck on it and suck on it.
But there's no there.
A Pringle.
There's an anywhere there.
They're designed to
Pringle.
Be, like all food it is, it's manufactured and designed to be addictive, but to never be satisfying. So you're hooked and you keep coming back. You know, so whereas people used to be addicted to other things in the East Village, now they're addicted to Pringles. And some flavors and some varieties sold around the world have so little actual potato in them, they can't even be labeled potato chips. If you look at some of them, they don't say potato chip on the label. They're just Pringles. They've become a category, sort of an entity unto themselves. There's no mention of potato because some of them don't even actually have potato in
that
them.
That is fascinating and fantastic.
That's the kind of stuff
you know,
we talk about.
I'm telling you, you got the seven really food groups either. Just have to take on an eighth now.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It is.
There's another. It's like it should be cardboard. Cardboard should be there with Pringles.
Cardboard's better for you. It has more fiber. You're actually better off eating the cardboard.
Well, so. I think we should do a study of that, you know.
Well, that's what we talk about on the show all the time is stuff like that, like, you know, Pringle. Like, there's a multigrain Pringle now. And the multigrain Pringle is a perfect example of foodiness, because foodiness is where the food manufacturers say, like, oh, no, this is better. This is real. This is healthier. This is the high quality. This is what you should be eating. But it's still packaged in that same.
This is just what 7-Eleven is really all about. One of the comments on one of the blogs said, well, you know, I want my Slim Jim, my beef jerky.
Yeah.
Well, right in our neighborhood, we have an Italian place on 11th Street, right on 11th Street on First Avenue, Russo's.
They offer
these fantastic Italian dried sauces.
Right.
It's really beef
the original
jerky.
Yeah.
If you go down to Chinatown, there are these fantastic, on Elizabeth Street, fantastic beef jerky. You get, they slice it up right for you, right then and there, in different ways. They can fry it. They can do all kinds of things for it. That's what New York is all about. If you come to New York, that's what you're there for, right?
You can eat a Slim Jim.
This is like the greatest city in the world. All of that stuff is right there for you. Why would you ever go to a Slim Jim for your beef jerky when you've got everything here?
You don't have to tell me. Look, I teach in
a
culinary school.
It's like a complete insanity. This could be like
it's an insult is what it is. It's an insult.
It's an outrage. But look, I mean, other than, you know, my very busy job here of doing my once a week show, I teach full time in a culinary school in Manhattan, and so I have students coming in who are paying a large amount of money because they think they want to be chefs, and they come
to learn how to do Slim Jim.
Not quite, but what they'll come in with their lunch, because class is at 1 o'clock, and their lunch is fast food. It's McDonald's, it's packaged stuff like that, it's drinks like those, like all in one, like breakfasty shake kind of drinks. It's all processed. It's all foodiness. It's all packaged. It's mind boggling. And they're spending $30,000 to go to culinary school, and they don't actually eat real food.
Flunk them. I'm sorry.
Well, I wish
just
I could.
Flunk them.
But no, really, that's what's available. That's what's being pushed on them. You can't blame them. It's everywhere.
It is. It's everywhere. But it's New York, and you can also get the other
it's
everywhere.
Not
also. It's not at Russ and Daughters, exactly. It wasn't at that great Korean deli I used to go to. So since this is a food show, technically, let's just talk about for a moment what potato chips actually are. Which are just potatoes. You slice a potato as thin as humanly possible or machinely possible, and you fry it in oil, and that's a potato chip. It's got two ingredients, three if you add salt. That's food. Your average Pringle has about 7 to 25 ingredients, depending on the flavor. And some of them don't even have potato as their first ingredient. Dehydrated potato flakes. Some of them are made out of rice flour. Some of them are made out of corn. Yeah, they're not even.
I got to do more research.
You
got to
do some more research
hate these
on
things,
the Pringle.
I better know.
You better know what you're hating. Yeah. So we are running out.
I happen to be a fan of the potato chip.
Of course. I mean, the potato chip is a brilliant invention.
I consider
There's
it
nothing,
to be a gourmet food. I mean, nobody makes
I'm with
them.
You. It is one of the most pure forms of cooking we have. It's beautiful in its simplicity. You take the potato, the humble, incredibly versatile potato. You slice it, and you fry it. And frying it in fat is better than frying it in oil. You know, fry it in pig fat or duck fat, or, you know, like in France, traditionally French fries are made in horse fat, which gives them really good flavor. Fry them in horse fat. You're not allowed to buy horse fat here. Did you know that? It's illegal. You can't buy horse fat in the U.S. because all of it goes to the pet food industry. So the pet food lobby has prevented the USDA from allowing horse and horse fat to be eaten because they want all the horse meat and all the horse fat.
Alex, we would like to help you on the horse fat front, but we just, you know, you can't protest everything. And we're the 7-Eleven
I know.
Guys, okay?
You have to choose your
but
battles.
We're with you on the horse fat.
Thanks. Yeah. You also can't buy certain organs, like you can't buy beef lungs or hearts because those go to pet food also, but it's okay. I know, we all have to choose our battles. Unfortunately, I have too many to choose from. Okay,
7-Eleven is a good one, though, because it's the beginning of being able to have no chains in our city, and that's what it wants to be. It wants we want to be unchained.
We want to be free.
We want the community to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
What San Francisco has is a requirement that a chain store has to go to the community first, and the result is that you get the chain stores where you want them, like
right.
major intersections
where you need them.
Because you do need to have some, you know, all-night full-service drugstore.
Sure.
That's absolutely essential.
Useful
but
businesses.
Not in
right.
your residential neighborhood, not where you live, not where your artists right. are doing crazy
right.
things.
Right, where people are trying
street.
To live a creative, interesting, and fulfilling those,
and,
life.
And we should not have to obey their corporate aesthetic. Their corporate
yeah.
aesthetic has got to merge with the neighborhood.
Right.
Both in what the products are and in the look and feel of the place.
But Bob, they can't merge with us because they're corporates. Because they're corporates and they're not local. They will never see us. They don't.
They will
never
obey.
Care about
they
us.
Will obey.
They will they will make us.
We will not
conform.
We shall not be Pringleized.
Let my people go.
Yes.
Okay. So, would you say that 7-Eleven is to the East Village what Pringles are to potatoes?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, that's what I thought you would be saying. Would Jane Jacobs?
Oh, you said her name. I was waiting.
Jane Jacobs.
Jane.
Rolling over in her grave.
Spinning.
You see, she would be one of the ones who'd be saying, "Shame on you for going
she'd
into
be out
that
there.
Store."
You know,
she'd be standing there.
She'd be tearing her hair out and running, screaming.
Yeah,
she would.
They
now,
don't exist on her block. Let me tell you.
Yeah, in her block in the sky. I always suggest to people that if you only eat food, just eat real food, you could avoid foodiness, and you'd be doing a lot for yourself. If we only ate real food half the time. Half the chain stores in New York would have to shut down. I mean, it's as simple as that. Just tell people to listen to my show and to eat real food. But what can we do? How can people get involved? What's the plan? So tell us how people can get involved and help fight the fight.
We're on Facebook. We have a Twitter hashtag.
Okay. Do you want to tell us what it is?
No, 7-Eleven with 11 spelled out.
Right, so it's N-O, number 7.
E-L-E-V-E-N.
NYC, right?
NYC.
NYC. So that's your Twitter hashtag. And it's facebook.com/no7, the number 11 spelled out.
Right.
Right. And people can also follow the blogs, the Evie Grieve blogs and Vanishing New York, both of which are doing the real journalistic dirty work on the Pringleization of New York. And anything else while you have your...
Well, we'll be having our bodega walks every other Saturday. So we had one last Saturday.
Great.
We'll have one...
Our website is going to open, what is it, next week?
Momentito.
Yeah.
Okay. You have a website about to launch?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're looking to connect with other neighborhoods as well.
Oh, okay. Good. So if people are in other neighborhoods and they have neighborhood blogs or community associations... I want to connect.
You know, there are 7-Elevens on the Upper East Side.
Yeah.
And those people are not happy
they
about
deserve
it
up there, though.
Nobody deserves a 7-Eleven.
Right, I take it back. Okay, right.
But I don't think those folks are going to go out and chalk the streets.
No.
So we're going to give them a little bit of help in some way. We'll find out.
All right, great. Well, it's been really excellent having both of you on. I think this has been really informative, and I hope people are getting as fired up as we are. So thank you both so much for making the trip out of the East Village on the L train out here to Bushwick. But it's, you know, Bushwick, and it sort of reminds you of what things used to be like, you know,
that's
before
cool
the chain store.
It's
so
cool,
it's pretty cool. And, you know, remember, if you don't want to eat shit and you don't want to be Pringleized, keep listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. Make sure you follow No7ElevenNYC on Twitter and Let's Get Real Show on Twitter. And thanks again to both of you for coming in. And thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer, and Joe Galarraga in the control room. And we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.